Mr. Pop.
I think this chart shows you why I found talkback radio to be something quite interesting.
This is Ruck and Roll, your weekly shot of sport and music with Kevin Hillier, Brian Mannix and Mark Fine.
This is Peter Griffin. How about me, Lois? Aren't I great? And everyone else is jealous of my awesomeness. I am way cool. Speaking of cool, here's Kevin Hillier, Mark Fine, and the really, really cool Brian Mannix. You're listening to Ruck and Roll. I don't know what that is.
That's all right, because neither do we. So you're in very good company. But what will happen between now and the next 59 minutes and 30 seconds is anybody's guess. Hello and welcome. I'm Kevin Hillier. There is Brian Mannix, the very, very cool one out of this trio. Hello, Mano.
Hey, Daddy, how are you doing? All right.
Lovely. And Mark Fine. Hello.
Hello. Hello, boys. How are we?
Very good. Very excited, Finey.
Why
are you? Well, I'm sure you're very excited too because, you know, back on the radio this week, Finey's final siren returns with another layer that I discovered on social media during the weekend that I wasn't aware of.
What's that?
Stephen J. Peake is part of the program as well, I believe, reading live advertisements for your show sponsor.
Well. I didn't know that.
Oh, that's good. I like Stephen J. Peake. He's funny. He likes an old 60s. Oh. He's like Tommy Hanlon Jr.
Oh, he's as mad. Oh. He's as mad as a cut snake. He is crazy.
No, that's incredibly unfair to that cut snake because he's sillier than any cut snake I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, he was so good to do radio with because some people would put on the madness that comes out of his mouth, but he actually believes it. So you can have an enormous amount of sport with him. Oh, he's unique. I tell you what, that was some of my favourite radio with him and the rarely heard from Howard Cotton. It was very funny.
Oh, Howard's a lovely fellow. I've got a great amount of time for Howard. And Stephen is just, I think he's the most eccentric human being I've ever been in the same room with.
You've got to see him. Just sometimes we catch up with a group of guys for a Saturday morning breakfast. And I remember once I went out for dinner with Natalie, myself, and Stephen. I had to go to the toilet, and after the meal, Natalie said, "Never leave me alone with him again."
All right. There you go. So we're very excited about that, and also very excited because this is the first week of Lenny's Fine Foods 2024 footy tipping competition.
$50,000 up at stake.
I tell you what, Brian,
terms and conditions apply.
Brian should be so excited.
Why is that?
Because we're all level at the moment. You're not running low.
All right. Yeah, I'm equal first.
And you know what that means, Brian? We're 26 weeks away from putting your footy tips into the deathalyzer.
I'd say that's probably don't have to wait that long.
Yeah. Well, we might.
I just want to know, you know, Brian last year got sort of forced into some crazy tips. I just wonder whether he's going to play for the win this year and be sensible, and it'll be very interesting.
Well, I don't think the first week there's, you know, really, if you got much of an idea who's going to win this weekend, I don't. You know,
well, I throw up some tempters.
Yeah, you do actually, and it's probably closer than last year. That like there was sort of clear things for me to go. No, I'm going for them. That's worth too much. But even the big points this week, I sort of find it's very good. It's quite challenging.
It's a ground zero round, so it's a shrunken down, shortened version of the first round of the season. But it's a very intriguing one in terms of this footy tipping competition. We'll get to that very soon. We've got lots to get through. I wanted to ask Brian, you're very heavily gigged on the weekend. You're flying around the country like a proper rock star.
Yeah, I was. I played at the Sandringham Yacht Club on Saturday night or Friday night, I don't know, and then Saturday night played back up here at Helensvale, Tavern, which I tell you what, I don't think I want to play there again because they've got these sound restrictions. So you can't be louder than 100 decibels. Now, to give you an example, probably a truck going past your home is 100 decibels, maybe more. So it felt a bit like going to war without any tanks or out the Air Force. And it was sort of like, you know, yeah, we're playing really well, but geez, we just can't connect the way we want to because we have all this noise. There's people wandering around with, you know, dB meters. It's like, oh shit, really? don't have a band if that's your problem, you know, with sound. You know, but rock and roll is loud, you know.
The sound police should never be allowed anywhere. Is that the one that you did with Kirky? Is that that one?
Yeah. Okay. That's the Queensland band. And okay. It was nice that Cherie and Kathy and a few people flew up to see it. So, you know, God bless them.
And it was nice that they put a whole lot of film footage on social media. I saw a couple of clips. It sounded good.
We weren't allowed to have amplifiers on stage.
There looked like there was no fallback.
It's like, it's terrible. It's like, you know, where's the band? You know, I like to be sort of have to really push loud to sing over the band. And I was just there. It felt like I was doing musical theatre again. It was like, oh, shit, you're out there on your own. So, I think I sang really, really well because I freaking had to. My vocals were so freaking loud. It's like, wow. Yeah. I think I prefer it when the band's a bit loud, and, you know, you can
hide.
You forget a line and you go, yeah, rock on, and you get away with it. But, you know, this was a bit brutal like that. But anyway, we got through it. I was really proud of the band and, and we do some really stuff that's quite difficult. So, yeah, it was, you know, another adventure in rock and roll.
Yeah, oh, well, it's always an adventure, and it should be. So I'm gathering that you and Nat didn't go and see Brian at the Friday night show?
No, we were going to go and play the Lucky 13, but I think you've got to be a member to go to the Sandringham Yacht Club.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it was they'd had a regatta or something. I'm not sure. But look, I plugged the shit out of Lucky 13 last week. And I don't think I'm playing there till April, you know. That's how good I'm travelling. But anyway, it's coming up.
If you play there on a Friday, we can't go. If you play on a Saturday, we can.
Well, I'll see what we can do. But we'll work it out. It'll be fine.
All right. We'll see you.
And I'm sure that's going to happen. And you reckon Nat didn't want to be left in the room alone with Stephen J. Peak. Wait till she spends some time with Brian. Now, March 3, 1996 is the chart this week, and let me take you through the top 10 of this very, very, very questionable chart. Number 10, Get Down On It by Peter Andre.
Shit.
Number 9, Missing the Remix EP, Everything But the Girl.
Shit.
Number 8, Digging On You, TLC.
Really shit.
7, Give Me One Reason, Tracy Chapman.
F*** off, how's that?
Nah, that's not bad.
It's not bad. 6, It's Oh So Quiet, Bjork. 5, One of Us, Joan Osborne, who's not.
4, I like that song. No, that's good.
Oh, really? Oh, no. Yeah. 4, Be My Lover by Le Bouche. 3, Breakfast at Tiffany's by Deep Blue Something. 2, Wonderwall Oasis. 1, Boombastic by Shaggy.
Be My Lover by The Mouth.
The Mouth? Is that what Le Bouche means?
Le Bouche is mouth.
Yep.
Oh, is that right?
Yep.
Be My Lover. So why don't they just call themselves Head Job?
It had already been taken by a band.
Oh, right, yes.
There was a band in Seddon who'd called themselves that back in 72 and they copyrighted it.
And their first album, Suck It, was a beauty.
It was huge.
It was a big 12-inch.
Yes, they had Alistair Clarkson do a quick little rap for him at the start of it. We'll get to that shortly. So that's the top 10. We'll get to that a little later on. Footy, obviously, we'll talk about in a minute when we get to the tips. Just quick on some of the other sporting stuff that's around that I wanted to mention. The NRL in their Las Vegas season launch. Thoughts, boys? Finally, you go first. You watch
it? Yeah, great. Big success. I thought it was good.
I actually thought it was good. I watched bits and pieces of it. I had it on. I wasn't watching it, you know, because it wasn't Storm, and I like watching Storm, but I watched bits and pieces of it during the afternoon. I thought it looked good. I thought it was really weird, though, I think it's something that they have to be careful. It was a much shorter field. It was like about 4 or 5 metres shorter lengthwise and widthwise, which I don't think is a smart thing to do. But what I saw looked good, and it I thought it fitted in Vegas.
Yeah, the crowd really got into it, and it was a success.
Do you watch any of it, Brian?
Yes, I did. I got sucked into Las Vegas pre-show thinking, oh, beauty, I wonder who they got singing and stuff. And it was just Matty Johns and them crapping, oh, well, the Brisbane Broncos, and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, look, I thought, you know, it was really great. I thought that as far as, you know, getting an imprint in the other side of the world, I thought it was a very good move. And I think it's probably a game that Americans can understand easier than AFL. I just flicked it on and off once the game started, kept an eye on the score. But it was a pretty low-scoring game, the
Rabbitohs one?
No, the other one.
Broncos and
yeah. And I felt that was possibly due to the narrowness of the – because it was really hard to find a break from what I could see because they're all closer together.
Yep.
So, you know, if you play there, you know, I'm an expert, so I should say this. Maybe you play with a player less on both sides just to open up some space. But anyway.
I think you have to pick the right teams. I think Souths and Manly were two good teams to pick because they do throw the ball around. They play that sort of footy.
Yeah, right.
I don't think the Broncos play that sort of footy really. Storm would have gone well there, I reckon.
Yeah, they should have had the Storm play.
It's a rotation thing because they've got a 3-year deal or whatever it is, and they're going to rotate six sides or whatever it is through the next few years.
What do you think the AFL's reaction to this will be? Okay, we've already got round zero, which is ridiculous, but they're not going to let this go unchallenged. They'll have to stage some bullshit game somewhere that no one's going to give a crap about.
You can't play our game on any ground in the world virtually because you need too big an arena.
Cricket ground. You could play in India. But they're small grounds.
Yeah, they're very small grounds.
I just reckon the AFL will do something. They'll have to have an overseas statement to react to this. I just think they can't stand it when somebody else gets one up on them.
Yeah, that's true. That might have been more about Gill than it was about the AFL, maybe. Maybe Andrew Dillon won't be as, you know, jumping up and down. That was Gillen versus Peter Volandis, I think. Some of that was a pissing competition between those two, wasn't it?
Yeah. And
that's on again.
If Gill goes to the racing and runs Racing Victoria, oh God. that goes to another step, two steps up the steps, to be honest, if those two meet in the racing world, because they got real big kahunas to play with there. Anyway.
Yep. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, it will be interesting.
Gill should be a Thunderbird or a stunt double for Mike Moore from Frontline.
He does look like a Thunderbird, I'll give you that.
Oh, yeah.
Some cricket news, obviously. Australia defeated New Zealand fairly easily in the first test over there. Ireland won its first test ever, which was pretty big. Beat Afghanistan, which is good. Stewie Law's been named as the coach of the American T20 team for the next World Cup.
Yes.
And the
Stuart Law.
Stuart Law, the former Queensland Sheffield Shield winning captain.
What's he doing?
Well, you know, he's got a very good pedigree, Stuart Law. He's coached by a very, very talented suburban cricketer.
So he's playing.
No, not playing. No, he's coaching.
Oh, okay. That's coaching. Fine, then.
No, his playing days are behind him. His days
that's good.
The days at the Everton District Junior Cricket Club set him well on his way to his international stardom as a batsman and Very good cricketer.
Okay.
So you coached him?
I had a bit. Yeah, did for about 5 seconds.
Didn't really establish himself in the Australian team, did he, Kev?
Played one test.
Do you think that's perhaps your fault?
Yep. No, actually, I blame my mate Ian Skipper, who helped coach him as well. It's all Skip's fault. We went around to his house, and his dad, Grant, a lovely fella, but obsessed with Stuart's cricket ability. And they had a bloody pitch and, you know, just about the Gabba set up in the backyard. And we said, well, you know, we'd like Stuart to come and come to training and train with the other boys. No, he doesn't do that. Well, he will, or he won't be playing. He doesn't do that. Yeah. Well, and he won't be opening the batting. He opens the batting. No, he won't be doing that because there's 10 other kids who are in this team and they're getting the go as well. Oh, okay. Well, I don't think that's going to work. So it didn't work for – it only worked for a couple of weeks, and then Stuart went off and I think played with one of the district clubs.
Stuart Lawless.
Yes. No, he's a nice young fella and all that, but yeah.
Doesn't sound like a nice young fella.
No, well, I'll tell you a story about Stuart Lawless.
Not a team player.
When he was captain in Queensland,
yes,
the Victorians absolutely hated him.
Not surprised. He was an arrogant, a very arrogant young man.
Oh, they hated him. And there was an incident where Michael Klinger egged one to slip and he didn't catch it, and he claimed the catch and they couldn't work it out on the replay. And anyhow, they just didn't like him. So I knew a few guys in the Victorian team, and they were playing a big game against Queensland at the Punt Road Oval. So I was encouraged to come down there and give him absolute hell because nobody connected with the team could say anything. And I did.
Oh, Jesus.
He was batting and he came off a lunch and he threatened me.
Ooh.
Yeah. Probably within his rights, given what I was saying.
Oh, Jesus.
So Hira Heckler was making a bit of money for you?
Yeah, no, it was all done for love of the game.
I was about to say it was all done with absolute glee by the sounds of it.
Oh, yeah, it was good fun.
So can you give us a ballpark of some of the observations you made about Stuart's parentage, Stuart's, tenure on the planet, Stuart's parental guidance?
Yeah, something along – I sort of mentioned he made – Hansi Cronje looked like W.G. Grace, the most decent cricketer that ever played.
Oh, dear. So you clearly pushed his buttons.
Yeah.
And did he suggest to you that he might want to go at the back and have a chat with you in private?
He told me to shut up or I'd wear the bat. I also did something similar at the Adelaide Oval. Who was the South African that used to captain South Australia?
Kepler Wessels?
No. South African. Mike Haseman.
No. I can't remember his name.
Mike Haseman went to South Africa, didn't he, after the Ribble Tour. Africa. Well, Barry Richards played there, but he didn't care.
This was far more recent.
I was going to say. Oh.
Perry Como.
No, he's from Seattle, Perry Como.
Seattle in Tangier.
I don't think he played much test cricket, but anyhow, he was South Australian captain. And I had a bit of a go at him and as to why on earth they'd select him as captain when he went out to bat. Anyhow, he made a duck. And when he came off, he smashed his bat against the fence when he was coming off and he broke it right at the splice. And then I said to him, well, now I know why you carry a bat out there because it's certainly not for f***ing batting because you couldn't hit a ball. And he lunged at me with the remainder of the bat like it was a f***ing sword.
There you go. Oh, well.
It'll come to me. I'll find out his name.
Yeah, I can't. I can't think. I know, obviously, they had a fair few international players. I can't think of recent times. Now, what else? Oh, I tell you, Brian, I don't know if you've seen this. And if you haven't.
I don't know if I have either.
Well, Kev. I don't. If you haven't, I just want to pre-warn you that it's very upsetting. You might actually be aware of it, but I think you played with this band at Crowell Castle. Eurogliders? Do you play the Eurogliders at Crowell Castle?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you've seen this post. Have you seen the post that Grace has put up on Grace Knight's?
No, I haven't. Okay. No, I haven't.
Well, it's very, it is very upsetting.
What is it?
Eurogliders have had to cancel all their gigs indefinitely because Bernie has throat cancer.
Oh, really?
And has to obviously go and have the chemo and the radiation and all those things, I'm assuming, that they've had to cancel all their gigs. And Bernie put a post up today, I think I saw it. And saying that, you know, thanks for all your thoughts and that. So, because I'm sure you mentioned them last week.
Yeah, yeah. I was talking to Bernie on the day. Commenting on how good his guitar sound was. And he seemed fine. His voice was, there's nothing to display any kind of weakness there. That is really distressing.
Hell of a nice fella.
Yeah, really nice bloke. I didn't really know him much till the Countdown Spectacular.
Yep.
And then him and me and Scotty, we went to the movies together and we hung out a bit. And he's a lovely man and he's really talented. So that's, well, I wish him all the best with his fight, and I'm sure, you know, he'll beat it. And then, you know, we'll just look at this like another bump in the road.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. But that was quite... Quite a shock when I saw that post the other day, because that did surprise me. All right, now we've got a lot to get through. We're 20 minutes in, so let's get to the Death Eliza, and then we'll get to the tip. The Death Eliza's fortunately light on this week, Brian.
Well, just a sec. I've got the name of that.
Oh, yes,
South African. And by the way, when I was doing it, Darren Berry, who was coaching South Australia at the time, who I know quite well, was yelling out from the stand, "For God's sake, shut up, Finey."
I can imagine Chuck doing that. But mind you, Chuck would have also probably been pissing himself laughing.
Yeah, he enjoyed it. Yeah. It was Johan Botha.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, he was a snotty little – he was a pain in the ass.
A real arrogant South African.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, he played a lot of Big Bash.
Captain the Big Bash.
And that was just with his wife.
Oh, stop it. All right. Well, I'm glad you've solved that mystery, Finey. Now let's get to the Death Eliza.
You made it through last week. Let's see how you go this week, because this is the Death Eliza.
All right. Let me have a look here. From the Sporting World, Darryl Vandervelde, who was a Queensland rugby league player. When I was up in Queensland, he played for Queensland up in the mid-70s. Good player. Passed away at the age of 72. Dave Myers, the chef, who was the man who wrote the Hairy Bikers cookbook and did the TV series.
Yeah, very sad.
He passed away, 66.
Yep.
Bloody young.
He's carrying a bit of weight.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, you know, maybe he's – well, you know, you're doing a cooking show. You've got to eat a lot of stuff. You've got to be seen – you know, imagine how much stuff you'd have to eat every day doing a cooking show.
Well, isn't the thing, you know, don't trust a skinny chef? Don't eat what a skinny chef eats, because they don't eat
it. Yeah, but sometimes it'd just be, oh, gee, I know we've got to film that again, and you're full and you've got to keep – loading it in, perhaps.
You know, the funny thing is,
weren't chefs.
They weren't chefs. I thought he was a chef.
Oh, he was. Was he? Because
yeah,
they met on the set of a movie.
Okay. I thought he was a chef.
TV show. Yeah, maybe he was doing the catering, and the other guy was in production or something, and they both had a shared love of movie. I think they're Novocastrians, Geordies.
Yes, I think you're right. I think you're right.
And they didn't get a job on Geordie Shore.
God.
Have you ever watched that?
No, no.
We had a bit of trouble last night on the show. You know, so what we're doing, the best thing we can do, because, you know, Patty's pissed off with Jenny. So what we're going to do tonight, we're all going to go out and get mortaled. Yes. And then that they're all putting the suntan spray on, and they just get drunk, and then they fight and root, and oh, it's terrific.
Ah, yes, the Novocastrians.
So he never made it onto that show. That's why he had his own cooking show.
There you go. Also in the Death Lives, Chris Mortensen, the ESPN Sports Center host. He passed away at the age of 72. I used to like watching him. He was a good sports presenter. And the big one, I guess, for the week, at the age of 76, comedian Richard Lewis passed away. Sick for a long time.
He was so good on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah. In the last season, there've been social media's been full of little clips from all sorts of things. I think he appeared on the David Letterman show as a guest nearly 50 times.
Very funny.
Yeah, and it was just one of those. He was the comedian's comedian in many ways.
Yeah, very good. Very sad.
So yeah. The age of 76, he is passed away. And if you saw some of the comments from some of the, you know, the big comedy people and big movie stars around the place about him, it's quite touching.
And one that almost made the list this week.
Who's that?
Who's that?
Well, Jimmy Webster did his best to put John Simpkin on the list.
Well, we're going to get to the footy, and we'll talk about that in a minute, because there's a couple of things off the back of that I'm not happy about that I think need to be curbed. But let's shut the Deathalyzer up, and then we'll get to the footy.
Ladies and gentlemen, there is no more death this week. That concludes tonight's episode of The Deathalyzer.
Got friggin' Vincent Price going on now. Great.
Couldn't help myself.
Yes. All right. Well, let's get to the footy. And Lenny's Fine Foods footy tipping competition is underway. Feel free to play at home.
So just to explain how it works,
yes,
Kevin.
Yes, please.
You can do it.
Oh, I can. Oh, yeah. Okay. So what happens is each week we will pick who we think will win, and Finey has graded the two teams. So, for instance, out of 10, the Swans in Melbourne, which is the first game of the year on Thursday night, it's a split decision. If you pick the Swans, you get 5. If you pick Melbourne, you get 5, which I was thinking today, and I sent Finey a message on a text message. What happens if it's a draw?
And my response was?
Dip me in honey or something, wasn't it? Strip me naked and dip me in honey.
Strip you naked, smother you in apricot jam and take photos, yes. I guess.
And sell to the highest bidder. Right. But I meant if the game was a draw, not if the tipping competition was a draw. So what happens?
Oh, no. That's we do that.
Same?
Regardless.
Okay, fair enough.
So if it's a draw,
yeah,
you get the points of the team you picked. So
okay.
So it doesn't matter in a 5-all game, but if you pick an outsider that manages to get a draw, you get, let's say, 8 points, and the others get 2 points.
That's good. That's
See,
good.
I like that. That's where this has the edge over any other footy tipping competition, because you have the guts to say pick West Coast to beat Collingwood,
yeah,
and then it's a draw. So really, they won. So you get the 8 points that you're going to get if they'd won. Oh, that's I like that a lot, Finey.
Oh, like it's going to come in handy.
I like that a lot. So let's get to the games now, Brian.
No, me start.
No, Brian. I've got the great big MCG scoreboard up here on the side of the wall here in Inverloch, and I'm looking at it now. It says Brian 0, Finey 0, Kev 0. How about that?
Take a photo, Brian.
Yeah, you're in front, Brian. You're equal first.
This is that sort of heckling you did to the cricketers, isn't it, Finey? No, we're going to confidently win the competition this year.
Okay. Confidently win the competition, said Brian Mannix.
Yep.
That may be the funniest thing you've ever said on this podcast.
I think you just grab that when you, if this is show gets edited, just grab that little sample so we can play it at the end of the season.
26 weeks' time, whatever it is, the season runs.
Probably 35.
I was going to say 432 weeks from now we'll be able to play that. All right, let's get to the first game. It is Sydney. It is Melbourne at the SCG Thursday night. Brian, you can select. Swans get you five. Melbourne get you five.
Well, Swans notoriously start the season slow.
Correct.
Melbourne, I don't think they're going to make the eight this year. And I think, you know, if in doubt, assume it's rigged, the best result for the AFL is that Sydney wins. So I'm going to go for Sydney.
Well, yeah, and given that they've moved all these games into the northern states to play because the NRL went to Vegas, you're right. Yeah. The best result for the AFL is for the Swans to win.
Yeah.
Okay. Brian Mannix picks Swans for 5 points. Mark Fine.
Well, I think Melbourne had a pretty good pre-season. I mean, they didn't actually. They lost Brayshaw and they had a few incidents, but on the field they've looked very good. I'm going to go for Melbourne.
So am I. I think Oliver, Clayton Oliver, seems to be back on track, or at least he's on the track at least, which is a massive thing for them. So I think they'll be too strong for the Swans.
Interesting. It'll be interesting to see Gawn take on Grundy.
Yeah. I was a massive rap for Brodie Grundy when he was at Collingwood. I was then a massive... Why was I such a massive rap for him when I saw him play for Melbourne? And I know he was, you know, obviously playing under extenuating circumstances. I will be very interested to see how he goes.
Yeah, he'll do well.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah, he'll do well, but not against Gawn. Gawn's brilliant. So, yeah. But I think he'll go all right, Grundy.
Brisbane play Carlton at the Gabba on Friday night at 7:40. For Brisbane, you get 2 points. For Carlton, you get 8. 8, Brian, for the filth. 8, Brian, for the filth.
The filthy Carl.
I just thought I'd introduce them as the filth early in the season so people know what we're talking about.
Yeah, okay. I think, you know, they've had more of a preseason probably than Brisbane because they played in the grand final and lost. Oh, they'll be fired up. But, no, for 8 points, I'm caking Carlton.
He's gone the filth, ladies and gentlemen. I'm even though it's 8-2, I'm so perplexed about this game. I can't get a read on either at this stage, so I'm going to play safe and go for Brisbane and take the two, but not with any surety whatsoever, and particularly when Finney's put 8 up for grabs on Carlton. Finney?
No Walsh, no Wietering, no Marks Bank. Carlton look very vulnerable in the preseason, and Brisbane didn't lose a game at home, so I'm definitely going for Brisbane.
All right.
Last year they were unbeaten there. So
at the Gabba, it's 2 for Brisbane, 1 for Carlton. We head to the Gold Coast, home of Brian Mannix.
Yeah, right.
And just down the road from the penthouse is where the Suns will play Richmond on Saturday afternoon at 4:20. The Suns winning will get you 3. Richmond winning will get you 7, Brian.
Well, I don't expect Richmond to make the 8 this year. I think they're one of the teams who are going to drop out. And
they can't drop out. They weren't in it last year.
No, they didn't make it last year.
Well, okay. I was right even last year. Now I'm going for the Gold Coast.
Suns to win for Brian. Again, another game that I haven't got a read on either of them. Even though there's 7 up for grabs for Richmond to win, the Suns there, I'm actually going to take the 7. I'm going to go for Richmond. I don't know why, but I just I don't have any credibility. The Suns have no credibility with me.
No, you may as well go for the points. I have to because I live here.
Yeah. No, they don't. Richmond don't have a lot of credibility with me either, just quietly. I think there'll be another one of those teams that'll be on the cusp of the 8, but I don't quite think they'll make it. Finey?
I've sort of tempted myself with 7 for Richmond because you don't quite know whether you trust Gold Coast yet, but I think Gold Coast are going to be pretty bloody good. That young developing midfield looks strong and quite frankly, with no Tom Lynch, no Jack Riewoldt, there's not much of a forward line going on there at Richmond at all, so I've got to go for the Gold Coast.
The Hardwick factor? Important?
I don't think it's going to kick in for 10 weeks.
Yeah, it's going to take a while.
Okay. Saturday night's game is the Giants and Collingwood at Giants Stadium. The Giants, they are when they want to be, they are a very, very good team. Finally only gives them four. And the reigning premiers, he gives six. So they're not favourites for this game. A tantalising six for the Pies, Brian.
Don't care. I'm going to go with, you know, I think it could go either way, but I'm going to go with, assume it's rigged. The best result for the AFL is the GWS. So I'll take the 4 points for GWS.
The air principle. The assume it's rigged principle.
The air principle. Assume it's rigged.
Yes, okay.
Which it's not, but you know,
no.
It's a good way. It's a good way to make a decision.
But if it were, it'd be played in Vegas. All right, funny. I'm going for the Pies. I still think they're such a good side to watch play. They're a few down that won't be there on Saturday night, but I still think they're a better side than the Giants, only marginally. Viney?
Gee, it's, again, very hard game to tip. They're both potential premiers.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both very good teams. I just think Collingwood don't know how to lose, so I'm going to go for Collingwood.
Okay. So we have Brian with the Swans, Carlton, Suns and Giants. Finey has Melbourne, Brisbane, Suns and Pies. And I have Melbourne, Brisbane, Richmond and Pies. So
an interesting mix.
Yeah. And that's only the Ground Zero first round of Lenny's Fine Foods. Beautiful. How did the bolognese come up that you made on the weekend, Finey?
Fantastic. We put it in a lasagna today and I had that for dinner and I can tell you it's top shelf.
Oh.
Look, my theory with bolognese is people want meat in their bolognese. So I make a very meaty bolognese. If you want to extend it out, add some tomato passata to it or whatever, be my guest. But nothing I hate more than buying a bolognese and slop. Looking for flex.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be meaty, so I go extra meat.
Oh,
it's pretty good.
Oh, I'm going to have to come in when next time I'm in Melbourne and I've got some time.
Yeah, come down. We'll load you up.
Yes, I'm going to have to. I love bolognese is best aged a bit. It gets better. Yep. Better the more the flavour. If you've got the right mix, which you clearly have, the more the flavour goes through it, the better it is.
Oh. I saw what's his name, Marco Pierre White. Go online and watch him make bolognese. Now I couldn't do this for the shop because it's so intense, but some of his theories certainly I do with my bolognese.
Okay.
But what he does, very interesting. He grates quite a few vegetables into it.
Yep.
Puts good quality wine in it. Plenty of meat. But then he sort of brings it all to the boil and then in one of those nice Le Creuset pots, you know, we've got one of those orange pots. He puts it in the oven for 2 hours on a low heat.
Oh, so like a slow cooker pot.
Yeah, I mean, they're not slow cooking. They're normally orange. They're these expensive French pots. You put them in the oven and they go dark orange. They're amazing. Yeah.
He pasta bakes the shit out of it.
And, yeah, he does that. And then he says, then put it in the fridge for 2 days. Don't even touch it to let it mature. But it's a beautiful
flavour. It'd go through it enormously. Beautiful.
Yeah, it looks like a beautiful rendition.
Oh, nice.
And that concludes tonight's segment from Taste Bites. Back to rock and roll. Yeah,
Jesus, I'm hungry now. Haven't eaten yet.
No, I actually.
I'm starving now.
And I'm never hungry.
No. No, I had a late lunch, so I thought I'd wait till after the show to eat tonight. Now I'm starving. But yeah. I've got a break between this and then Brian and I got a very exciting interview we're doing after we finish rock and roll tonight.
Oh, don't we ever.
It's a beauty.
Deep Purple. Woohoo.
Yes.
Who is it?
Roger Glover from Deep Purple, the man who bought us, the man who came up with Smoke on the Water, and the man who came up with the Butterfly Ball,
and he wrote the riff to Maybe I'm a Leo, which I had to listen to. It's pretty cool.
Yes, I know he'll be good. He'll be good. Now, speaking of music, we need to get to. I wanted to mention that Ange Postecoglou won the Coach of the Year in the UK. A bloody
effort.
I'm proud of you, Ange. Well done, mate.
Good on him. Spurs won on the weekend. West Ham won on the weekend.
Both came from behind, so good efforts.
Yes.
Bournemouth beat Burnley. And the Burnley, they're looking in trouble.
They're gone.
Bournemouth 2-1, so good for Bournemouth. I like Bournemouth.
Three up, three down in the Premier League. The three that went up are all going back down, I can tell you that for starters.
Did Everton got those points back, didn't they? So they got their
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they got 6 of the 10 back, I think.
Okay. Oh, well, they're safe.
So I think they're all right now. I think they'll be okay. Yeah.
We gave them a good beating.
Good to see City beat Man United. Bournemouth beat Burnley, 2-0. There you go.
Yeah, Man United's first goal in that Man City game was a beauty. It was from well outside the box and it just rocketed in like a torpedo and it was there. Yeah, it was great.
Oh, okay. Haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah. Because I did, I thought I'd sort of mention it so I sound knowledgeable.
Don't think we did last time, the 10-0, the Matildas.
Oh, yeah.
They were 9-0 up at half time.
I was going to watch it. I watched it and then I forgot and I got waylaid doing something else. And then I looked at I put it on, looked at my phone and looked at the score and it was 7-0. I thought, well, this is a pointless exercise.
Did you see the young Matildas, which is the under 21s or the under 20s? And they were playing Uzbekistan today or yesterday. And the poor girls. There's snow all over the field except in the box. And the players had to scrape the snow off the field themselves before the game started. But it was like, it wasn't like a layer of ice. It was like big chunks of snow, like 3 or 4 inches thick.
Well, it was freezing there the other week when the Matildas played there.
Right. Well, there was snow everywhere. They could barely see anything. But anyway, they won. So looks like the future of the Matildas is good too.
Yep, certainly is. All right, let's get to the chart. We're going to March 3, 1996, this ARIA chart. March 3, 1996, I was just about to get the arse from Triple M off the morning show back in March of 1996. What were you doing, Brian?
I was bringing up two very lovely kids. All of them had hair of gold like their mother.
One of them in
sometimes I'd crack the shit. I was sort of really full on into father mode at this point. Okay. And and consequently I didn't really listen to a lot of music, and I think this chart shows you why I found talkback radio to be something quite interesting.
Yep. I can see. What were you doing in 96, Fonny? March of 96.
March of 96, on March the 22nd, 1996, which was, by the way, the day of the first Grand Prix in Melbourne after we got it from Adelaide.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Was the day I made the best decision of my life and married Natalie.
Very good. Very good. March 22, 1996. You've been married that long. Wow.
Yep.
Wow. Good for you.
Coming up to 28 years.
Well done.
We did have 2 years apart.
Yeah, no, but well done. Very good.
It's interesting when you split up and get back together. It's been fantastic ever since.
Yeah, no, you seem very solid. Very solid these days. This chart, when you compare the singles chart, and I mentioned the top 10 at the top of the show, and then have a look at the album chart. God, is there a chasm of difference between those two? The album chart includes Oasis, Live, Presidents of USA, The Smashing Pumpkins, Alanis Morissette, Neil Diamond, Tommy Emmanuel, Nick Cave, Green Day, and Jeff Buckley. Hardly any of them appear on the singles chart. The singles chart is full of dance, ish music and odd bits and pieces. It's a really funny chart.
Bloody shithouse, Keith.
Well, I found not one song I love, couple I like, and a lot I just couldn't give two flying fat rats clackers bags about, to be honest.
Okay.
The one that I love, the one that is verging on love, to hear, and it's one of those, it's like I guess, having a drink that you haven't had for, you know, a passione. Say you decide you want to have a passione, you think back to your kids, you go, oh, I haven't had a passione for, oh, I'll have a passione. And you get halfway through it and go, yeah, okay, the first couple of mouthfuls are fantastic, and that's why I won't have a passione for the next 20 years. Bjork's song is one of those songs for me on this chart. I love it for about 2 minutes and then turn the bloody thing off. I don't want to hear it again for another 10 years. It's sort of Linda Blair meets Shirley Bassey. She screams and yells and then, oh, so, shh, in it. And it's great. She sings really well. And there's so much about it to like, but it's that give me the pine lime splice from 1996 and I'll have that and have two bites of it and go, no, give it back again. I'm done. So that's my first observation about this chart. Finally, what's yours?
Well, I've got two observations, two songs that I've researched. Yep. Three songs, actually.
Okay.
So are you familiar with Pusa?
Who?
Pusa.
No, I'm not. So make me familiar.
So Pusa had, you rarely see this, two hits in the chart, both next to each other in numbers, 18 and 19.
Oh, okay. So you're talking about the presidents of the United States.
Of America.
Yeah.
They were known as PUSA, Presidents of the United States of America. On the back of Lump and Peaches, they toured the world. They had, both of them were big hits in the USA and around the world. They had do you know what the term eponymous means?
No.
Eponymous means the title of the album is their name. So the eponymous album, The Presidents of the United States, was their album in 1996, and it went triple platinum, and that's basically all they did. But they actually were out of Seattle, that sort of grunge movement or whatever.
Yeah.
Their first release was a 7-inch vinyl single titled Fuck California.
Nice work.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Well, not a big hit in California. They knocked back what very few people knocked back, and that is the chance to perform live on Saturday Night Live.
Ah.
Because one of their band members was getting married. But they did perform on Mad TV, and they performed the greatest song of all time on Mad TV.
Clearly not Lump or Peaches.
No, When the Saints Go Marching In.
Oh, is that right? God. God love
it. So that's my observation of Tusa.
Mm-hmm.
My next observation is of a interesting band called
Joe Biden to help us out with their name, shall we?
Yeah, you'll have to remind me of the band name because I'm more interested in their lead singer. The single was called Fee Fi Fo Fum.
Oh, that's the dance band. I know who you're talking about. That is Candy Girls.
Candy Girls.
Yeah.
Now, Candy Girls, that song actually went to number one on the USA dance charts. Yep. Their only hit. Do you know who the lead singer of Candy Girls is?
No, refresh my memory.
Sweet Pussy Pauline.
Oh, of course. Sweet Pussy was terrific.
I remember her first album, yeah.
Yeah, she, yeah. And her solo work was good too. And when she worked with Domingo and Pavarotti, that was amazing.
Sorry, what's her name again?
Sweet Pussy Pauline. Do you want to hear the singles she has released?
Oh, I don't know, but
I don't know that anybody wants to hear the singles she's released.
Is this where we go parental guidance needed here? Go on.
Yeah, what's she released?
Are you ready? I'm not making this up.
Oh, God.
Her first single was Work This Pussy.
Oh, nice.
She followed that up not long afterwards with Big Dick Man.
As you would.
Mm.
Then Beat the Pussy.
Oh, well, it's just, the sequence is obvious.
Then Big Black Dicks.
See?
Okay.
Told ya.
Then 6 minutes of Pussy.
Right.
That surprised me.
I'm tipping there's another big dick coming up next.
I don't think so.
Then the big hit, oops, fucked him again.
Of course.
Okay. So it seems like there's a bit of foreplay, then there's a big dick, there's a bit more foreplay, another big dick.
Right, I haven't finished.
Then the big black dick. Oh, okay.
She then had another single, Heads, Tits and Ass.
Ticking all the boxes.
Yeah, there's no gender bias here, and I'm pleased. I'm pleased that that's the 1996, that that was not an issue.
Are you ready? I haven't finished.
Oh, God, no.
Then followed that up with Hurt Me, Hurt Me.
Oh, now she's getting really sick.
Jeez, must have gone off, been off a chocolate that week.
Why are you wasting my time?
See?
Change positions.
Oh, God.
Wham, bam. But probably her most memorable single was Little Dick Motherfucker.
Wow.
I made none of these up.
You made all of them up. No.
I don't know what that's going to do. I don't know how that's going to come out in the end of this week.
Well, I'm going to be listening to Sweet Pussy Pauline this week. Yeah. I tell you what. Yeah, she sounds interesting, if nothing else.
Yeah, she certainly leaves nothing. Left nothing in the dressing room, did she?
Yeah,
well, it sounds like one of those songs, you know, you got people at your house and you want them to go home, you just put a bit of Sweet Pussy Pauline on, you know, Big Black Dicks, and that'll probably do the trick and they'll be home and you can just sit by yourself and have a rest.
The SPP clause, it is.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep, whack that one on and off they go. Righto, Brian, what are your observations on this chart?
Well, Kev, apart from about three songs, my first observation is that 37 of them are absolute shit. It's just fodder. However, I do like One of Us.
Joan Osborne, do you really?
I really, really like that. In fact, I'd use it in my movie Apostle 13 if I ever get the money to make that.
Do you like it because of the lyric content and the questions that it asks and that, or do you actually like the song?
I love her voice. I think melodically it's great. I think it's really well produced. But I do like the idea, like, you know, okay, you believe in God. Well, you know, what if that bloke over there is God? Well, how are you reacting? I think it raises a lot of good questions about how serious you are about your religion, or, you know, do you just think it's something ancient and historic? I don't know, you know, but I like the fact that it raises the question. So, So that's my good one.
Yep.
And the other 37 is shit, and the other good one is probably no surprise. Wonderwall. It's a great song. Sounds like the Beatles. And
it does, doesn't it? It really does.
It sounds like the Beatles with Marshall amps.
Yeah.
And you know, and you look at the rest of this chart, you can understand why this song was so welcomed, because it, you know, it's got a beautiful melody and it's not a dance hit. It's just a song that's really cool. And
he
know, when
sings
you,
it really well. Can I say he sings it really, really
yeah.
well?
Yeah. And I like the fact that when you play it, no, I'm not going to get my guitar because after last week it sounded
like it
was underwater.
Didn't quite work, no.
No, it didn't work. But I like the root note that he no matter, there's four chords in it, but there's a G root note. I think it's a G. And that just rings through the whole thing. And I like those kind of root note things. But, yeah, I think it's a great song. Don't Look Back in Anger is probably better, but it's not in this chart. So Wonderwall's my go-to number one.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's a great song. I watched it today and watched the clip and just thought, yeah, what a pity that those two were so dysfunctional together off sort of camera because they were a really good combination as a the front two men in the band.
They were like a bunch of soccer hooligans that happened to have a hit record and they behaved like soccer hooligans. There's a story about, you know, they're on tour somewhere in Texas or something, and Liam or Noel's in bed with some hot chick, and the two, and she goes, "Come on, get out of bed. We gotta get to freaking Kansas or wherever they're going." And he just pulls the sheet back and says, "See this amazing looking girl in the nude." And he goes, "Would you get out of bed for this?" and then the tour manager, cleverly enough, said, "If you don't get on the bus, you're not going to get this. So go and work." So that was great.
It's a very good tour manager. He would have had you. God, that would, wouldn't that?
Oh, that'd be the worst to be the tour manager for.
I was going to say, wouldn't that be the job from hell, being tour manager for Oasis? My God,
only one band worse.
Who would that have been?
Happy Mondays.
Oh really?
Oh yeah, they were completely out of control.
Just another manic Monday, I guess.
They were given a huge amount of money by, what was the record label?
Universal, Sony?
No, out of Manchester.
Sucked In Records, perhaps?
No, it was the ones that had New Order, and it's in that movie, 24-Hour Party People. But they were given a huge amount of money to go ridiculously to Jamaica or Barbados or something to record an album.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was their vibe.
Yeah.
And they spent the entire amount on drugs and came back with nothing.
Oh, jeez. Well, they probably weren't the first to do that.
Not really good, is it?
And they were brothers as well.
Hmm.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't fancy being tour manager for the last lap of the thing, whatever you're doing with the Uncanny X-Men.
No, I wouldn't either. And unfortunately, I've got to be in the bed. No, we get on all right. I think Motley Crue would be a bad band to be the tour manager for.
Yeah.
And in their day, when Keith was at his best, Stones would have been a nightmare.
Though Mick was always very organised and very very businesslike, from what I can gather, and so was I think Bill was a bit of a tearaway, but I think Charlie Watts was pretty straight up and down, wasn't he?
Yeah, he had his own little cup of tea set that he used to take on tour. So
Ronnie Wood was a bit out there too at times. So they would have had some interesting times.
Yeah,
interesting stories. So
Happy Mondays were the Ryder brothers, Sean and Paul Ryder.
All right,
and the label was Factory Records.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
Tony Wilson's Factory Records, which was one of the funniest stories in music of all time. But anyhow.
Money and bands is sometimes not a good combination.
No. Never works.
Now, we're just about done for another week, boys. So, Finey, one more thing.
Well, we didn't really discuss Jimmy Webster, but on behalf of all St Kilda supporters, hang your head in shame. I mean, the guy's got rocks in his head.
Yeah, yeah. He'll get his 8 weeks probably. I don't agree. The thing that I saw that I don't agree with commentators calling for him to get 10 weeks, and I don't think that's their place to be doing that. And I don't think that it's of any business to writers of the game to be talking about Alistair Clarkson needs to be fined heavily and all that sort of. Let the game rule itself. We don't need bullheads in the press. Any buffets in the press trying to set the agenda and making out like they're running the game. Bit tired of that. None of our teams are playing this week, are they?
No.
So we're sort of languishing, just watching, not actively and emotionally engaged.
Except I reckon it takes about 4 or 5 weeks before you really get sucked into the footy.
Well, no, it takes this Friday night. When Finey returns.
Oh, well, that'll get it sucked in. But, yeah, and I, you know, actually, if I can, I'll have a listen to Finey abusing the good drunk, the good drunks that ring up and say, hey, it's bullshit to fuck it up. I want to go fucking great fuck. Yeah, no, so that sounds like entertaining radio to me.
Finey, that'll be caller one.
Pardon?
Caller one will be like that. Hey, Finey, he's going to have me back. I was talking about the bloody Melbourne. What are they doing, mate?
Fucking bullshit, mate. Bullshit. We should have won a fucking umpires.
We've got to get to the news. I've got to go and eat my birthday cake, and we need to say
happy birthday.
Thank
Kev.
You. We need to say bye bye.
Happy birthday, Kev.
Thank you. See you next week, boys. Here's the news.
You've just experienced Ruck and Roll. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Facebook.